Why are obesity and high blood pressure such problems in the United States? Why are strokes one of the leading causes of death? Why are anxiety and post-traumatic stress such a part of modern life? Well, the new book says we've been wired that way, that ancient humans' bodies had to adapt to survive, picking up traits that allowed us to survive in a pre-modern era, and that those historical adaptations are now causing more harm than good. The book is called Too Much of a Good Thing, How Four Key Survival Traits Are Now Killing Us. Author Lee Goldman joins us. He's a cardiologist and dean of the medical school at Columbia. Dr. Goldman, welcome to Here and Now.
My pleasure.
And let's talk about these four survival traits that you say are now killing us. And first, our appetite for calories, something that benefited us when we were hunters and gatherers. Now, not so much.
Exactly right. So for millennia, from the beginning of the human race up to about 1850 or so, human life expectancy was about 33 years, and the biggest challenge was simply getting enough food, getting enough calories. So we were built to be hungry, to gorge when food's available, and to store that excess as fat in case we can't get enough food tomorrow. So everything about our human genes is built in that particular way. Some people who come from particular parts of the world where calories are even in shorter supply may have even more in the way of genetic variations that help them do this even more efficiently than the rest of us.
And you're saying that when I get hungry, that's genetic. That's not the ad for a pizza that I'm seeing right before.
If you didn't get hungry, you wouldn't be here. Your ancestors would have died a long, long time ago. We are the descendants of people who did this the best. And that's why we now are so efficient at storing fat, why we're so good at getting hungry, and why in America a third of us are frankly obese and almost 15% of us have diabetes as a result.
Similarly, we needed water and salt back in the day so that we wouldn't become dehydrated. Now we move around a lot less, we sweat less, and yet we still crave salty foods.
Exactly right. So in the caveman era, if you will, one of our biggest advantages was our ability to run long distances. Lots of other animals are faster over a sprint, a cheetah, for example. But if you put a cheetah on a treadmill, it'll run for about a mile and then stop and just roll right off the treadmill because its temperature goes up to 107 degrees and it can't run anymore.
Hmm.
We're able to run long distances because we're the best of any animal at sweating. The sweating keeps our temperature down because as the water evaporates, it cools us off. And in fact, we are about as cooling ourselves off as a room air conditioner is at cooling a room off. That's a huge survival advantage when you've got to chase after your food. But it means that we were built to crave salt. In even Roman times, salt was more valuable than gold. Roman soldiers were paid in salt, and the word salary comes from the Roman word sal for salt because that was what was so valuable. Now today, salt is available in great excess, and it directly explains why about a third of Americans have high blood pressure. If you go to parts of the world where salt is still difficult to find or to get, people rarely, if ever, get high blood pressure, even as they age.
The third trait that you talk about in this book is the idea that our ancestors needed to avoid attack, so they always had to be vigilant. Now that the world is safer, you say that being hypervigilant can lead to other psychological conditions, and do.
Precisely. In the Paleolithic era, the best estimates are that about 15% of humans were killed by other humans. When people settled down and started farming, as best we can tell, that number went up to 25%. So you had to be afraid. You had to be fearful. You had to find ways to protect yourself, including withdrawing so the bully wouldn't kill you. Those same traits, key for our ancestors' survival, now explain why so many people have anxiety and depression. And now, today in America, more people die of suicide than die from all wars and murder put together.
Hmm. And the fourth trait that you talk about, and people, I bet, are guessing at this point, what could it possibly be that we're about to say? Well, it is the ability of blood to clot. Tell us what we used to do and what we do now.
Sure. Well, back to all those injuries, we needed to clot so we didn't bleed to death after someone clubbed us over the head. But even more importantly, every time a baby is born and the placenta breaks loose, a mother's at risk of bleeding to death. And back in olden days, they often did. What protected those mothers was the ability of her blood to clot and clot rapidly, a terrific survival trait. But now people rarely bleed to death, and in fact the two leading causes of death in America are heart attacks and strokes, both of which are caused by blood clots. Heart attacks, blood clots in the coronary arteries, strokes commonly by blood clots in the arteries that supply the brain. So a key survival advantage in the old days now directly causes death.
So what are we supposed to do about this?
Well, if I had a quick answer, I'd give it to you, but I can tell you two things that are unlikely to be successful. One is the genes that have gotten us this far have developed over 10,000 generations. The world has really changed since about 1850. That's at most 8 or 10 generations. Yeah. Our genes can't change fast enough to save us. They were built to get us through age 25 or 30, not to get us to age 75 or 85. So that's hopeless. The second big possibility, and I would argue not as good a possibility as many may think, is we'll all change our behaviors. We'll eat less. We'll exercise more. We'll crave salt less. We won't be anxious. And that all kind of sort of theoretically makes sense, except it's built into our genes. People today, a third of Americans who are obese, they're not obese because they're morally weak. They're obese because every gene is telling them to eat more. In fact, if you try to lose weight, no matter how much you weigh, a whole series of hormones kick in and make you hungrier and slow down your metabolism because we weren't supposed to lose weight. That was a bad thing. So behavior change is really, really tough. Some people will be successful, but I argue it's not going to be the solution to every problem that we have.
Well, and when you say that this is killing us, we should also point out that we are living a lot longer than those ancient ancestors did.
We are, and that's the good news. But we could live even longer and better if we could figure out a way to address these four issues. And one of the points that the book makes is there are some things that already work and some hope on the horizon as well. Perhaps the best example of modern medicine is the treatment of high blood pressure. As a cardiologist, when patients come to me and say their blood pressure is high and can they eat better and exercise more and lower their blood pressure, I say, yes, but only by a little bit. Rarely will that be adequate to treat high blood pressure. We have a whole range of medicines, however, that treat it very effectively. And even though people with high blood pressure are asymptomatic, this treatment will prolong their lives, reduce the risk of strokes, reduce the risk of heart attacks, clearly beneficial. Right now, for obesity and diet, we don't have that sort of magic pill, but we may sometime in the future. We may have something that'll fool our tongue into thinking that something's sweet, tell our brain we've had enough sweet, and we'll stop craving sugar. We don't have that yet, but it's certainly possible. So there are also a whole variety of genes that we just don't need anymore. One of the best examples is a gene that helps keep our cholesterol levels at what our bodies thought was the necessary level, especially in the Paleolithic era when food was in short supply. There are now occasional people who are missing this gene, don't have it from either parent, and their LDL or bad cholesterol level is 14, lower than any of us have otherwise. It just shows that some of the genes that used to be critical are now not only deleterious in some ways, but truly unnecessary. So there's a lot of hope, not yet realized, that we may be able to find specific ways to blunt the effect of genes that we simply no longer need.
Through manipulating the genes ourselves, is that the way that we fix this problem? Is just as science gets better, we go in there and say, let's turn this gene off and turn this one on?
Well, that's one possibility. Right now, there are medications that can blunt some of those genes. In some ways, statins do that, but there are other more powerful medications on the horizon that can do that. There also are techniques used in animals that can actually go in and turn off the genes. There's a lot of debate right now about the ethics of that in humans, and I'm not proposing that certainly right now. But the possibilities scientifically are really spectacular.
As you were researching for this book, did you find any gene that worked really well back then and works great now?
Most of our genes are still really important. Our cells, our organs do all sorts of things every day to keep us alive. We have millions and millions of genes. Most of them you wouldn't want to tinker with. But there are some that we simply don't need anymore. And as we discover them and figure out ways to blunt them, we can perhaps get the best of both worlds, the survival traits we still need, but not the ones that are too much of a good thing.
That's Lee Goldman, who is dean of the medical school at Columbia University. His book is called Too Much of a Good Thing: How Four Survival Traits Are Now Killing Us. Dr. Goldman, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.